I didn't put out the request for feedback until about 7 hours ago.
So what have you got to say for yourself?
I was sick.
Oh, you were sick, Reese. Is that one in your book? Okay, right. All right, can you... Oh, the right...
Yeah, just to punctuate.
A little bit of phlegm just hit me in the eye.
Yes, like I said on Facebook, I was walking around and tripped over one of those volumes of the books of excuses and was knocked out for several days.
Be quiet. Let's get on with the show. Hang on. Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 333. I'm Adam, and I can think of a quote, actually, because I was put on the spot, because I'm a bit sort of behind. So we'll move on to Kirby, Bartlett, Sloan.
Haroon.
I don't know why I let him go first. And Mary Lang.
I usually do those musical cues.
Yeah, but I could do this one for a change.
Yeah, you got your introduction, Mary. You're just still waiting for it. I thought you were
Yes, I do. The future you set so much store by is yours now.
And we're still waiting for Reese to say, of course I'll join you on the show this week. And we'll say hello to Paul Gabert, who's also commented on the thread as we speak. And then Joshua Dybald said, you're a wily old bird, Hepesh. And then Ashley Hughes says, Hadley was just dancing to the 20 megabyte theme. What good taste he has. Did somebody burp then? Right, this week...
Hopefully with the dancing was accompanied by the proper hand gestures.
Pardon? What proper hand gestures?
You know, when Susan is listening to the tune.
Oh, okay, yes. Right, okay, thank you.
The proper hand gestures.
Yeah, if you say so, yes, right. All right, this week we're going to be looking at The Curse of Peladon. Now, the problem is, in my not quite getting myself ready, I forgot to get the DVD player going, so I'm just going to get that going now, because I need to have that up and running to do my... Oh, where's the DVD thing gone on here? It's amongst... Oh, Other, here we are. Other. Where's the DVD thing going? It's in here somewhere.
Now,
there it is.
Joshua wants to be called Josh.
Okay, Joshua. Josh, sorry. Yeah, my future...
Pardon me while I cough up a lot.
Yeah, thank you for that. sorry about that, listeners. We don't normally have coughing and spluttering on the show, apart from when I choke on my Pepsi Max. Kirby, of course, if it had been anyone else, would say, can you mute your microphone before coughing and spluttering?
I have to find the mute somewhere.
That might be a good idea.
I'll find it. Oh, there. Is this it? Let me see.
I don't know. Anyway, I was going to say that Josh the name of my possible future son-in-law. Yes, co-founder of the show's boyfriend, the one she lives with. And his mother is called Josh. Right, a bit of useless information, nothing to do with Doctor Who. I'm just trying to pad it out whilst the DVD loads. Right.
Why is it taking so long for an Apple, the perfect computer, to load a simple DVD?
Because it is a piece of software on that said superb computer, which is still acts like a DVD player, and you still have to wait for the DVD feed in to work, like the copyright notices and stuff like that. Josh just said, it's a great name. I chose it myself. How did he choose it himself? That's quite interesting. I'm sure we'll find out. Oh, I just knocked my bell.
No. Right.
Okay, it's nearly loaded. We've just got the bit with the TARDIS flying through, and then we go through the window, and then we get the menu. And that's the bit I'm waiting for. Right. So that will now enable me to go to episode selection, episode one. Right, episode one begins with a title sequence and
a bit
of Delia Derbyshire. And then we get this very sort of, this sort of looks very drawn, actually. It looks like somebody's painted like a citadel on the mountainside or a cliff.
You're right, it does look like a painting.
It's very incredible. Anyway, but it is quite atmospheric, obviously, the thing. It's quite interesting, mountainside citadel. You can imagine there are places I think on Earth that have these weird sort of cities that were built into rock. There's one in the Sahara Desert, I think. Ian Kirk has just posted his feedback, so that's something we've got to look forward to in the show, isn't it?
Yay.
Sorry about the unenthusiastic yay there from Kirby, Ian, if you happen to be watching. He didn't mean it.
That was enthusiastic.
Yeah, didn't sound very enthusiastic to me.
Yay.
Right. So, yes.
Much rejoicing.
Within the Citadel, we see a couple of pompous beardies hovering around and arguing in front of, obviously, their king, the belispied King Peladon. He's got a bit of a lisp, hasn't he? And very young as well. And the fight ends up with one of the beardies getting killed by... Well, how did he get killed? I'm trying to work it out now.
Yes, he does. He does get killed.
Oh, he gets killed by Agador.
By Agador.
Yeah, he gets killed by Agador. And of course, the other beardy blows. Oh, this is the ghost of Agador is coming to get us because we're doing all these things it doesn't like. Specifically, the notion of joining the Galactic Federation, which sounded a bit Star Trek-y, where they used the word Federation.
Yes.
This story was definitely influenced by the Star Trek story where they had Spock's parents.
Yes.
And they're going to bring in someone to the Galactic Federation. I haven't seen that one in a long time.
Nor have I. But Aaron T. Butcher's joined. He will be, of course, disappointed to hear that Debbie Railroad is not going to be on the show and therefore not going to be reading out his feedback. However, somebody's going to be reading it out.
What
on earth was that? You're right, Mary. And Ian Kirk then says, no, I just arrived a few seconds too late to hear what Kirby said. That's a good thing, Ian. Right, so the Doctor and Joe...
Shut up.
The Doctor and Joe are meanwhile in the TARDIS, and we see a bit of that backdrop from the Hartnell days that you love seeing so much, Kirby. It looks a bit battered and worn at this stage. We do see
and
a little
bit. It looks
so
strange to have a black and white backdrop.
Yeah, if you say so. So, yeah, the Doctor thinks he's got the TARDIS working again, and they sort of land the TARDIS right on the edge of the cliff. So they and it's quite windy as well, so they just about get out.
I believe I read that this is going to be the last time we see those two particular interiors. I think the next time we see it, it's when they've got all the salad bowls on the inside. That one shot.
What are you talking about?
The interior of the TARDIS.
Salad bowls?
Salad bowls?
They redid the TARDIS interior once where all the roundels look like bowls.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about.
I believe that one's coming up, although I've never actually seen that story.
Well, you will see it.
We're in a whole bunch of stories right now that I've never seen.
That's one of the Atlantis stories, isn't it? Yes. There's the one where they go to Atlantis. You'll see that soon. That's also the one where the Doctor mentions Kamba Rinpoche, which obviously was a foreleader to his doom somewhere along the line, which we'll come to in a few stories' time. Anyway, I was trying to say the Doctor thinks he's flying the TARDIS, of course, but the Time Lords, as we find at the end of the story, have flown it beautifully to land on the edge of a cliff when they could have easily just taken it into the Citadel and parked it in there somewhere. Anyway, the Doctor and Joe jump out of the TARDIS just before it plummets down the cliff. Of course, it's indestructible, apparently, so it doesn't really matter. And then they're stuck
on... doesn't so much fly as plummet.
Yeah, so they're stuck on the cliff edge. Very good... filming, etc., to actually make it feel as if it really was on a cliff edge. I was quite convinced by the way it was shot, and that was pretty good. So they're trying to find a way either up the cliff to the civilization or along it. Meanwhile, the Galactic representatives have arrived. That's Alpha Centauri. Excuse me. who are you laughing at?
Alpha Centauri, probably.
Yes. What's so funny about Alpha Centauri?
When we discuss our impressions of the story, later I'll
tell you more. Okay, right. Anyway, so Alpha Centauri arrives along with, the Ice Warriors and Arcturus. Yes. And anyway, so Joe and the Doctor, meanwhile, eventually find their way into, well, Joe actually finds the passage inwards into the Citadel, while Hepesh plots to try and sabotage this thing that King Pelodon wants to do, which is join the Galactic Federation.
Arcturus's head, besides looking rubbish, is based from a bad mold of an Ogron. That's what they started with. And from there, they added other things and just made it worse.
If you say so. Anyway, right. So, yeah. So the Doctor and Joe make their way into the Citadel and then have to immediately pretend, because they're waiting for the delegate from Earth, that they are, in fact, the delegate from Earth. And, of course, the punishment for a woman stepping into the king's chamber, other than royalty, of course, is death, as it always is in these sort of things. So Joe has to immediately transform herself into a princess, which she does rather well.
Well, she does very well.
Joshua Dyball says, "Hey, hi, eyes are very good, though. Look very real." Yes. He's referring to Arcturus's eyes, I think. I think that's what he's referring to. So, yes, Arcturus... got a funny voice, hasn't he? Actually, he reminded me of a voice of a previous Doctor Who monster. But I can't remember what it was. That awful. So the Doctor, like I say, is very good at pretending to be the ambassador from Earth. And but Hepesh plots the death. And he gets Grun to climb up above them and prize a great big sort of statue of Agador just to land on one of the delegates, which the Doctor, of course, saves. And the delegates were the Ice Warriors. So this instance, the Doctor saves, I think it's Islia, specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Isla.
Is it Isla or Islia?
They say Isla in
Isla.
The...
Is it?
Isla.
Isla. Hey! All right, fair enough. Debbie would have appreciated that. She'd been giggling for about half an hour if she'd been here for that one. Anyway, I hope Isla's not feeling too bad. Poor Isla. I know she feels. I had chicken pox. It's horrible.
I thought she had chicken pox already.
She probably has. I think Isla's ill quite a lot, isn't she? Which I think in some ways is a good thing, because I know lots of children that spent their whole childhood being ill for one reason or other. And when they got to adulthood, they were so strong, had such a good immune system, and they were never ill again. So... yeah, good old Isla. Anyway, right.
Or they're so weakened that they are kind of sick the rest of their lives.
Oh, being a pessimist, Mary. Anyway. So, the Hepesh takes an immediate dislike to the Doctor, which is quite interesting. And on the other side of things, Pelodon takes immediate liking to Joe. I like the scene where the Doctor sort of uses his eyes to send Joe backstage to... to pick up the thing, and Joe manages to do the whole thing without being noticed by anybody.
Doesn't it seem odd? She's wearing, like, of course, in the newer version, the iridescent pink dress, and like nobody notices her in that. In that dark room and this shimmery dress.
Maybe the Pelodonians were sort of Pelagolians, Pelodonians, colorblind perhaps. They couldn't see the color pink. That's plenty of thought. We've got 8 viewers, everyone. See, Debbie's not on the show, and everybody's start a fortune. Anyway.
Why is it all the other aliens, all 3 of the other aliens are green?
Because that's a general alien color, is it not?
Right. I guess.
Well, obviously.
I read somewhere that there was a choice to make the people that were on Pelodon to... in blues and purples, and that all the visitors and all, because including the Doctor and Joe, were all in greens and reds.
Yes. Yeah, so okay. That, after that, the viewership went down to 6. Anyway, thank you, Mary.
I'm driving the
balloon. So only about 10 minutes into the story, Peladon's trying it on with Joe. And of course, they find Joe finds this piece of kit, and they obviously throwing suspicion on the Ice Warriors, which the Doctor's already suspicious about because he's had a few run-ins with the Ice Warriors over the years. Meanwhile, Arcturus has allegedly been, someone's tried to attack him, so he's allegedly dying. And the Doctor, his life support system's dodgy or something like that because he's been ripped apart. The Doctor fixes it. And again, that suspicion falls on the Ice Warriors. The Ice Warriors are suspicious of the Doctor. And Joe gets shut in a cell by the Ice Warriors while they try and find out what's actually happening.
It's not a cell. She's
well, it is essentially a cell because it's been locked in.
It's Sorg's room.
Yeah, which is essentially a cell because the door's been locked. Meanwhile, she climbs out through a window and climbs back in through... must have been a bit drafty, I would have thought, because they've got these...
I was wondering that myself. Those windows are just holes in the wall. Yes. But you don't hear any of the noise of the wind or get any of that cold in there.
Yes, Kirby.
Take a good look at her shoes because they change from... Let me find a good view of her shoes.
Oh, good grief. Just say
you
it.
Can see, when she is... Her normal shoes, I believe they don't have straps, or do they have straps?
Does it matter?
Yes, because when you see the scene where she's going along the ledge, yes, and the ledge crumbles beneath her shoes...
Yes.
The shoes are the other way.
Well, she had one like on left and right.
If they had straps...
What?
if they had straps, they don't have straps. Or if they didn't have straps, they have straps. I don't remember if they have straps or not normally.
So we just spent 5 minutes of the show you wondering about the straps.
It was a different pair of shoes.
Okay, so she changed the shoes. Okay, great. Anyway, so...
No, it was a continuity error.
Okay, it's a continuity error. Anyway, meanwhile, the Doctor... Joe bumps into Agador and runs off. Pepesh is trying to get the Doctor into the catacombs.
What did you call him?
Pepesh.
Pepesh, yes. I thought you called him Pepesh for a second. It's Pepesh.
Yes, I just said that. Anyway, he tries to... sort of get the Doctor into the catacombs so he gets killed by Agador, but of course he doesn't. He finds his way into the sacred chamber, the inner sanctum, which again is punishable by death. And
yes, a lot of death.
Yes. So obviously, I wonder if they got a law that says if you break wind in the wrong direction, that's punishable by death. Or maybe break wind in the company of the king is punishable by death. I don't know. But anyway, so the Hepesh... Joe sort of tries to, Josephine, as she is in this episode, tries to say, "Oh, you want to be a civilized people, but you're going to just let them kill the Doctor because he wandered into the wrong room," you know. So he said, so he changes it a little bit that he can fight for his life against the King's Champion. Now Andy Nunney says, "Just as well, I'm not on the podcast. No broadband and 3G falls over every two what?" I miss Andy, don't you? No, okay, fair enough. Underwhelming response there.
I was researching something. What did he say?
I was trying to figure out what his message meant.
I said, I miss Andy, don't you? And you went completely quiet. It was probably the quietest you've ever been. Anyway, so like I say, the Doctor is sort of put away because he's going to have a fight with Grun, but Hepesh decides, "Oh, I'll let you go. Here's the route out of the tunnel." It gives the route out of the tunnel. Take Josephine and fly away and go in peace, etc. But again, it's another plot.
Why is Grun mute?
I don't know. Why is Grun mute?
Yeah, there's
I don't know.
Because they don't want to pay him.
Yeah, pay him extra for
his speaking actor. They have to pay him.
But he does go.
Anyway, maybe he wasn't mute, and you just didn't understand his Birmingham accent, right?
That could be.
Yeah.
I can't understand Birmingham accents.
Anyway, so the Doctor meanwhile makes a little.
He's talking so fast that it just comes out as a grunt.
All right, and maybe that's why he's called Grun. Because it's a grun with a T on the... He just took the T off.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh.
So, as I was trying to say, The Doctor, in fact, ends up back in the catacombs with a little gadget he's made with a mirror on it. He spins it and sings a little song when he bumps into Agador, of course. But Joe comes along and scares Agador away. This fierce Agador, who just killed Hepage's arch enemy, is scared off by a girl in a pink dress.
I wondered about that too.
I thought the Doctor's response to that was, well, he's obviously quite disappointed that she ruined the experiment, but he appreciated, you know, the fact that she was trying to save him, and he wasn't horrible to her like he has been in previous episodes.
Yeah.
He was actually a bit more consistent with the character of the Doctor in that particular scene. Yes.
I love a couple of little bits that Pertwee worked out with the little spinning mirror thing.
Yes.
When he first puts it together in an earlier scene, he hypnotizes himself for a moment. Yeah. And then that's the scene we just spoke about.
Joe gets hypnotized
for a second.
Yeah, it's good.
They worked out all that in rehearsal.
Yes. So, the Doctor, I love that scene where the Doctor and Grun are lowered down into the pit. It was really, really cool. And it reminded me a little bit of a scene from Star Wars. I think one of the Star Wars films. It was The Empire Strikes Back. Probably isn't like that, but just reminded me of it for some reason. It's a really cool little pit, that, with the sort of rope netting on the side. And, of course, Pertwee. Yeah.
So it was a good fight, too. I didn't expect it to be a good fight, but it was.
Yeah, it was good.
Seeing that Stuart Fell became quite involved with the making of the Star Wars movies... Yeah. Maybe he had something to say with it.
Maybe he did.
About it. Yeah. Stuart Fell is inside Alpha Centauri.
Yes, I know he is.
Well, other people may not know.
Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says, Grin is mute because he can't talk. And then he says, he can't talk for budgetary reasons. That's what you said, Mary. Anyway, the Doctor.
But, you know, I wondered, they're fighting and then... because Grun loses his weapon, Hepish pulls out the sword and gives it to him. I thought, isn't that against the rules?
Yeah, well, obviously not. By the way, Alan T. Butcher then corrected himself and said Grun. So the Doctor wins the fight, but lets Grun live, which obviously works in his favour because Grun becomes a bit of a mate of his. I did like the Doctor's waistcoat. We've got to mention this. Really cool waistcoat he had on during the fight. And because he saves Grun's life... Somebody then gets their gun ready to kill the Doctor, and then we see this sort of spirally thing that makes it look like at the end of the episode you would think the Doctor is getting killed, but if you look very close, it is in fact an ice warrior holding the gun. But obviously, if you've been watching it when it went out, it was so quick you probably wouldn't have noticed that. You'd probably think, oh, good, how's the Doctor getting out of that one? Episode 3. I think I've got the right episode. Oh, no, I haven't, have I? Hang on, I've got the right episode. Hang on, I'm getting... Oh, that was episode 3.
You were just describing episode 3.
That was episode 3, yes. I've made a boo-boo there, sorry. Episode 4 is moving on to. Sorry. Anybody who's joined us for the first time, of course, it's just me pretending to not be particularly slick on this part of the show. Right, episode 4. So the Doctor, of course, has been saved by one of the Ice Warriors.
I need to start episode 4 here. Hang on. Okay, started.
Just saying, he's been saved by one of the Ice Warriors, and Hepesh and Grun. Grun hangs around, so Hepesh goes off in a huff. He just disappears for a few minutes. Yes.
Just to back up a second, when we're first introduced to
he could have gone off in a minute and a half.
When we're introduced to him, I mean, it takes forever for his weapon to like gear up and fire.
I bet it does, Mary.
That scene, it's kind of like it took everybody by surprise, and he's firing it so fast. It's like, wait a minute,
Mary's on the show.
I just thought him.
Oh dear. Right, let's get back to Doctor Who. Right. So Joe is then, because the Doctor has to go off and investigate what's going on a bit more, to try and sort of, he's got a plot in mind, but he's not telling anybody what the plot is because it's a really cool ending to the show. So he disappears and leaves Joe to chair the meeting, or chair the conference. as to whether the delegates are going to leg it back to their own planets or just give the planet a chance to join the Federation. Meanwhile, Hepesh gets all his little followers together, and they're going to do a revolution, in fact. They're going to sort of kill everybody and threaten the king and say, right, king, if you don't join us, then you're going to die, and Hepesh becomes king. But unfortunately, the delegates can't contact their spaceships because Hepesh has arranged for their communications equipment to be... we forgot to mention that Arcturus was the one trying to kill the Doctor, and the Ice Warriors killed Arcturus. So that was right at the end of episode 3. So Hepesh is taking a bit of an upper hand at this point. There's a great big battle in the throne room. Peladon, a very nice man, not particularly impressed with this whole setup. The Doctor successfully hypnotizes the very cute Agador.
Yes!
The princess, as it was, sorry, not the princess, it was Josephine, as brought into the throne room, and Hepesh basically tells all the delegates to bugger off back to their own planets. Sounds a bit like somebody we know. And then Agador wanders in, and of course Hepesh says, oh, this is rubbish, I have control of this beast, and waves a flame and says, kill him, as they like to do in Doctor Who. Obviously the Doctor, he's trying to get him to kill, but Agador didn't like that and just swatted him down on the floor. Of course, that swatting was enough. Maybe he had sort of aneurysm or something like that, and he collapses on the floor and dies in Peladon's arms. But if I'd been Peladon under all these circumstances, I wouldn't be picking him up, even if I'd known him all my life. Wouldn't be picking him up and say, oh dear, Hepesh. I'd be thinking, oh, well,
he's
good
been
riddance.
He's against him the whole time.
Mm. But Peladon's a nice man. So, you know, you don't... A lot of people, you know, might have a horrible upbringing and had nasty people looking after them, might have still loved them despite their faults. I don't know. Maybe that's an example of that. But either way, he's very upset that Hepesh is dead. There's a great scene where Hepesh's right-hand soldier hands the king his sword, probably so as the king can just kill him. But the king says, no. This will be wiped. The memory of this will be wiped from our history. And this will be a new start for them. And
Lester,
yes,
that right hand man soldier was originally supposed to be Terry Walsh, the stunt supervisor.
Yes,
but he got double booked and couldn't make it to this particular story. Although all of the stunt people in this are from a company he formed to compete with Havoc, because Havoc had price themselves out of the business.
Oh, okay.
Although this is the only story where this particular stunt crew was used.
Oh, okay. So the Doctor wins out, and we've got to mention also that Peladon sort of one, he sort of semi-proposed to Joe, and then there's an announcement that Joe is going to marry him, and he hasn't even asked properly and been approved of. And then right at the end, he actually does physically ask her to stay, but she, I think she's tempted. You get that air that she's tempted to stay, but she's not going to.
I don't know. It's a little creepy because he says his mother was an Earth woman, and you can imagine his attraction to Joe is because she's an Earth woman, and we got a little mother thing going on here. I don't know, I'd be a little creeped out if I were
her. No, but
his mother was a hamster, and mother smelled him.
I think when you watch the scene, you do feel as if Joe is sort of considering a little bit. No, she really can't. She has to get back with the Doctor. And
he's got an Oedipus complex going.
Yeah, and they're going to go and watch the procession.
Some of those scenes, by the way, when Joe's talking to Peladon, you can see how her mouth is kind of big from certain angles, so I can see how, as she's gotten older, that's influenced the way she looks.
Okay, thank you. So they're going to go and watch they're going to go and watch the procession and something like that, but unfortunately the real Earth delegates turned up, so they basically leg it back to the TARDIS and disappear just in the nick of time. There you go, that's Curse of Peladon. Right, I'm going to tell you what I think of this story. absolutely love this story. This is, if not my favorite, that's not my favorite John Pertwee story, because I know which one that is, but it is right up there among my favorite Pertwee stories, and probably right up there one of my favorite stories of all time. It's really, really good fun. Again, I have pointed out a couple of faults here and there, but they're not really faults in the storyline or anything like that. They're just little silly things. I don't want to elaborate too much, because I just really love it. It's a really, really good story. I mean, yes, Alpha Centauri does look a bit daft, but the characters actually play quite well. Considering you can't see an expression on the character's face, because it's just a plastic ball with an eye in it.
How does it eat?
Does it matter? It's an alien creature. It might absorb things. It doesn't matter how it eats. It's a science fiction fantasy TV show. Maybe it eats through its eye. Maybe it absorbs some sort of radiation through its eye. And that's how it... Because eating is gaining energy. Eating is gaining energy, is it not? You can gain energy through the sun just by sunbathing. You can't eat...
I'm just being my normal irritating self.
Yes, but
self. You
know I'm right. It's fine. It's,
yes, master.
Arcturus did look a bit rubbish, but I quite like the idea of it.
Hmm? You have to ask the question, if it's a hexapod, which is what it says it is, hexapod means 6 feet, and we can see all 6 feet. So how is it getting around?
Doesn't matter, Mary. Anyway.
Arcturus on its bottom.
Shut up. Arcturus, maybe the Daleks lent it some technology, I don't know. Arcturus obviously does look a bit rubbish, like you said, but I think they covered it up quite well by squirting green glue around the goldfish bowl side of things. But again, I quite like that. Of course, it would be lovely to have the Ice Warriors. I love the twist that the Ice Warriors weren't baddies in this story, because I remember when I saw it for the first time, I thought, oh, no, what they're going to do at some point. But they remain being goodies throughout the whole story, and I really did love that twist on the Ice Warriors. I think if you'd watched it... in the 70s, you'd never seen the Ice Warriors before, it wouldn't have been a big surprise to you. But for long-term Doctor Who fans at the time, it would have been. And that was a...
So you knew that the Ice Warriors were bad at the time? Had you ever seen...
Yes,
this is the first time we've seen them since Stratton days.
When I watched this story, I knew I'd seen Ice Warriors stories, so I knew the Ice Warriors were baddies. So I loved that twist to it. I thought Joe was very strong in this. There was no... and she adapted to that situation. She had to pretend to be the princess. She had to pretend to be regal. She was really, really good. Pertwee himself, fantastic. I think all the performances, David Troughton as well. Obviously, he did have a bit of a lisp. But all the way through it, it was a strong story. The scenes were great. It wasn't even the battle scene wasn't too long. It was just a little battle scene at the end. Brilliant, ideal. Love this story. Mary, what did you think? Hang on.
She's usually last.
Yes, I know. It's because I'm missing Debbie.
Oh, she's still usually last.
We have to save the best till last. Kirby, what did you think?
I liked it, which surprised me, because now it's time for me to tell you my history with this story. When I got the DVD the first time, I put it on, turned on episode one, and I burst out laughing.
What?
When I saw Alpha Centauri.
Anthony Butcher said, it may not end through the other end. And then he said, he would. Anyway, carry on.
Anyway, I saw Alpha Centauri, and it was so silly looking that I simply stopped. I could not watch. This is years ago when I got the DVD. I could not watch anymore, because I considered Alpha Centauri to be one of the worst. Whether or not it was a monster or a hero or a character or anything. Just it comes in and what? So I never gave this one a chance.
Have you not seen some of the absurd monsters they had in Star Trek? Come on, man.
This is one of the most absurd things. Although I have to say, Arcturus is much more absurd.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So I had not given it a chance. So this past Sunday, right after we recorded, I sat down with this, started it up, Fred came in and joined me, and we watched the entire story through and loved it. Absolutely loved it. This is one of my favorites now.
Now, you know, I said earlier on that Arcturus's voice reminded me of something. I think it's the Quarks, actually. I think it might be the Quarks, the voice. Anyway, have you done now?
Yes, I'm done now.
Yeah. Alan T. Butcher says it has 6 feet on its front. Stop sneezing. And then and is walking on its hands. Yeah, 6 feet on the front, and he's walking on his hands. That's what Alan T. Butcher says.
Oh, walking on his hands. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Listeners, prepare yourselves. Mary?
Well, the funny thing is I almost am totally in line with Kirby in that when I started watching it, and there are these people that are acting like, oh, dead earnest. They're just so into, you know, the battle between, I don't know if they're brothers or just, you know, or what his uncles, whatever. But they're, you know, this is all going on. And then the doors open and in walks Alpha Centauri. And my first the reaction was, what? What is this? And then to make it worse, then they bring in Arcturus. And it's like, what? Does it get stupider than this?
I just thought of something, Mary. Sorry to interrupt you. I just thought of something. Yeah. In the there's a scene at the end where they're all there shut in the room, and Alpha Centauri is sort of whining on, and Islia is saying, "Oh, be quiet, Centauri." And even Joe says, "Centauri, be quiet." That's what in that scene, Alpha Centauri was Kirby.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah.
Carry on.
So anyway, but because we had to watch this all the way through, I stuck with it, and I have to say I basically enjoyed it because it had this dead seriousness about it, and the suspense about the Ice Warriors. You didn't know whether you could trust them or not.
Oh, sorry, it's all gone wrong. Sorry. Oh, for God, what's going on here? Hang on.
Don't press stop.
What happened there was I got so excited because I wanted to play this that I double clicked it and it opened up in iTunes and then started playing all the subsequent tracks.
But anyway, I think they made really good use of the history of the time of the Ice Warriors in order for us to, you know, be
suspenseful. Oh, can you say that again, please, Mary? I love the way Americans try and say words that have got loads of R's in. Go on, say ice, whatever it was again.
Ice Warriors.
Yes, Ice Warriors.
What?
I love
What's
it.
What's wrong with
ice
that?
Ice Warriors.
Well, look how we make fun of aluminium and words like that.
Aluminium.
It's Ice Warrior.
It's Ice Warrior.
I know, but I just like the way Americans say words like warrior. Warriors and mirror. I just love it. It's lovely. It's very cute.
Say warrior and we'll say warrior. I don't understand.
Warrior.
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 They say warrior.
Warrior. That's what it is, because that's what it is. It's warrior.
Mirror.
No, but it is, honestly, okay. It's really cute.
We're putting an R on the end and they're not. I see.
It is. Goodness sake. No, Americans pronounce the letter R a lot, don't they? But the funniest one is obviously mirror, which always makes me laugh. And murderer. It's like, have you heard a Scottish person try to say murderer? I'm not going to do it myself because I can't do a Scottish accent. That's quite amusing as well. Carry on. Sorry, I got slightly sidetracked then.
I was saying that I think they made really good use of the tension that the presence of the Ice Warriors carried with them, that you weren't sure whether to believe them or not. But there were just so many things in this story that just made me continually sit up going, what? Are they kidding? Like, we've got this prissy little prince in velvet short pants.
Yes.
Who can't make up his mind about anything. I mean, he just looks to one person or another and maybe even the Federation to make up his mind for him. And I think Joe walked away from a disaster when she didn't marry him. And then that what we mentioned before about Joe in her iridescent pink dress, somehow being able to slip out unnoticed in a meeting. The whole thing with the hypnotizing device that the doctor comes up with. And then we have Agador, who is presented as this monstrously huge.
And he's so cute.
That is, yes. People. And then when we meet up with him, he's just this little tiny who just likes the doctor.
And he likes to tickle behind the ear.
What are we doing? But I'll tell you one really positive thing I have to say, too, is about the change in Jo Grant. She is, I don't know, get her away from UNIT, maybe. She is independent, and she's thinking for herself, and she's devising plans, and she's actually acting, you know, like a grown-up, like a true Doctor Who companion, as I've come to appreciate. So I really enjoy that about her, and I hope it sticks.
I will say it will stick. It does stick. This is the Jo Grant that we all recognize.
Just this little dewy-eyed, you know, in love with the Doctor.
There might be a couple of relapses into that type of show, but this is mainly consistently the Jo that I remember. For me, obviously, I did say that Day of the Daleks was the first story I watched as a child. I was probably about 5 years old that I remember actually having seen, but I don't remember the storyline. The next series of Doctor Who, I watched more stories of, like the Three Doctors and stuff like that, and that's when I see Devils as well. That's from this series. So things like that I remember physically watching. I think we watched the Sea Devils simply because it was filmed on the island. I think everybody on the island was glued to that story. And of course I was at a school that was within a stone's throw from Norris Castle anyway. So all these things brought us into watching Doctor Who at the time. So Jo Grant was a very recognisable character for myself. So I wasn't that familiar with the Jo that you referred to as being a bit, you know, not really with it. This characterization of Jo is what the one I recognize the best.
Yeah, and this Jo I could like. Yeah, I've been on a warpath in terms of hating Jo Grant, but this one I can like. And the last thing I want to say is any show that can get away with dressing a phallus in a shower curtain with a spooky it's got to be something special. So I think I'm done.
Dear. Okay, thank you, Mary. I suppose we could do feedback. I did get some feedback from Billy Kirkbright. Let's see if I can read that out. Well, there's quite a lot of it. I watched, studied, and critically analysed The Curse of Peladon to do my utmost to send in feedback this week. However, being Sunday night, I've had a few wines, and I'm not sure I can compose myself enough to send in audio feedback. I'll add in then a Billy Kirkbrightism to sort of make it a bit more like a Billy Kirk by audio. Okay. Good stuff. Great stuff.
Don't make me laugh. I'll choke to
death. But I thought two episode was interesting. That might not be worded correctly, but I'll read it anyway. Not brilliant. I've never been one for Doctor Who stories when they convey political stroke social relations stroke issues type stories. Hence why I find the Sunmakers laborious to watch, or even the Green Death.
I love the Sunmakers.
Okay. Great stuff. Not sure I'd go out of my way to see it again, but it was great to see the Ice Warriors. You'll have audio feedback for the Sea Devils. That's beautiful, all-time classic. Okay, great stuff. Have a good day. I'm taking my drunken body to bed now. Thank you for that. That's Billy Kirkbright, everyone. Thank you, Billy. That's absolutely. I do like Billy's audio feedback, don't you? Right. Next one. Let's see if we can get me jingle ready. Here it is.
Hello, Friends of Bigfoot Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Me.
The Curse of Peladon by Brian Hills. There was a bit of humour at the beginning and end. The Doctor boasted of a perfect landing, then the TARDIS falls down a cliff. We get the Doctor Who joke. The Doctor uses some Venetian karaoke. Haroon, haroon. Luckily, Jo Grant was all dressed up for a night out when she was called upon to pretend to be a princess. This story was filmed about the time Britain was negotiating to join the European community. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a bit of disagreement on the DVD extras as to whether that is what this story was about. Agador seems to be the spirit of Brexit. I wonder if they're offering a possible exit for Katie Manning.
Oh dear. Oh, he went all quiet then.
Oh, yeah, what's going on?
I don't know, he went all quiet. Thanks, Ian.
He usually finishes by saying bye for now.
He did say bye for now. He just said it very quietly. Right,
oh,
then.
Okay.
Guess who I've elected to do Ian Kirk's feedback? Can you guess? Oh, it's gone very quiet because they're all really, really worried.
Yeah,
right, whoever's going to read it has just had it arrive in their Facebook Messenger inbox.
Oh, shoot.
Good luck.
Where is my Messenger inbox?
It's on Facebook, dear.
Oh, Facebook. Okay.
Yes. At least we get a little bit of a tune out of her while she has a look.
Oh, my. Oh, boy, does he write on and on.
And I'll bet a whole bunch of this is going to be on the EU and Brexit and a whole bunch of stuff. Because
could
be. He calls it Polexit, a fantasy happy ending. Dear 20 megabiters. The Curse of Peladon is, of course, a closely studied allegory of the British relationship with the European Union. Torbis is Edward Heath, looking to engage with an interplanetary alliance. He is removed by an internecine plot, just as Heath was soon after arranging entry to the organization. Hepesh is a Nigel Farage figure, ruthlessly misusing Agador, who clearly represents patriotism by employing irrational mumbo-jumbo. He is also working with Arcturus, Vladimir Putin, of course, to damage the Galactic Federation and ensure a split to his advantage. The Ice Warriors, much vaunted as villains because of their history, turn out to be strong, albeit mirthless, allies, i.e. Germans. In the end, under the influence of the Doctor, the spirit of British good sense wins out as Agador turns against Hepesh and all is well, pretty much. This is, of course, fantasy and wish fulfillment. We also learn that a young American Civil War soldier has managed over centuries to work his way up to be a young King Peladon of Peladon and was later to become a professor that holidayed.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. No, not the cat Midnight. Also, we learn that radio character Grace Archer was, in fact, a bulbous green monoid, hermaphrodite, hexapod from Alpha Centauri. So it is somewhat surprising how little comment this elicited from residents of Ambridge until she was burnt to death horribly in a farmhouse one day simply to spoil the launch of ITV in 1955. Wow, is that a true story?
I don't know. But it might have something to do with the archers. I'm not 100% sure, but carry on.
Oh, that is what it has to do with, yeah. All in all, The Curse of Peladon is of a flawless and classy Doctor Who story. Pertwee's finest performance, matched by everyone in it. Rather more in tune with the previous age of Doctor Who than with the mid-Pertwee era, it also elevates the Ice Warriors to the top tier of Doctor Who aliens, which hopefully will be extended once again this year. It is a personal favorite, being a perfect exhibition of the art of studio-bound TV drama. Next up, Doctor Who and the Submarine Echo Scenes drop a clanger seeking mastery. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
That was EOC.
Right. Why have you just posted on the thread, Kirby?
Take a look.
It says, Jo steps onto the ledge with no straps on her shoes. Oh, dear. The ledge crumbles a few seconds later under shoes with straps.
You should see a picture.
I'm not really interested, to be fair. But thanks anyway, Kirby.
That's what I was trying to say.
Right, that, I just want to talk about Mary's reading of that particular feedback in relation to Debbie Melrose, of course. Debbie, you're fired. Well done, Mary. That's brilliant.
Thank you, thank you. But he didn't send any, like, really tongue twisters to me.
Yeah, there was that one.
Yes, to her, yeah. So
maybe
yeah.
he knew that Debbie wasn't going to be on the show.
Yeah, in her defense.
did
actually, we've known for a few days that she wasn't going to be on the show, I think.
Did Alan know?
Yeah, probably. I think that she's mentioned.
But she's mentioned it in Messenger, but I don't know that she's put it on Facebook. Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
It'd be nice to think she was watching, wouldn't it? But she probably isn't. I've seen her hair, by the way. She's I don't know if I'm allowed to tell the story, but she was on the bus. This is Debbie Melrose, lovely Debbie Melrose, with Isla. And some horrible youths were behind her being sweary and stuff. So she turned round to them and said, would you mind not using that sort of language? I have a six-year-old child with me. To which they carried on swearing. And then apparently one of them stuck some chewing gum in her hair. So she was forced to come and see my lovely wife, she who must be obeyed, and get a haircut. So quite drastically, bear in mind Debbie's hair was long enough to touch her belt. So now it's
really?
Nowhere near long enough to touch her belt.
Her hair never looked that long. Really? It was long?
Very long. Yes, very long hair.
Wow. Yes. Oh, Alan T. Butcher just posted, all of that was written since 6:45 p.m.
Yes. Thank you, Alan. Mary appreciates it, don't you, Mary?
Yes, I do. I enjoyed reading it.
She loves political satire, don't you, Mary?
I do.
Yeah, she doesn't. Right then. I wasn't going to do it tonight. That's what she said. But something's making me want to.
Do what?
Do.
Oh, no.
Yes, it's the big American battle. I don't mean Trump versus Clinton. It's going to be Bartlett Sloan versus Lang.
Yeah.
And I'm staying right out of this one. It's just a straight battle between you two.
Well, we don't have to give our prediction?
No, we don't. It's a straight...
My prediction is Adam.
No chance. Not in this one. It's you two. I'm staying right out of it. I'm Putin. I'm not. That'd be wrong, wouldn't it? Right. Okay. Right. So the first question goes to Mary. Which character spoke first in the story?
Wow.
You don't have to say I know, Kirby, because you're the only person in the quiz, by the way. Yeah. Right. So which character spoke first?
Count.
No.
No, I don't remember who spoke first.
Kirby?
Heppish.
No, the answer I should have stated, I should have had myself in this one, shouldn't I? It was Torbis was the first person to actually speak.
Remember, I do much worse on stories the very first time that I have seen them.
Honestly, Reese. That's probably recently been on the show. If he's accepted the invitation, you would have been in trouble for using three of his excuses so far.
I told you I tripped over my.
Don't go back over that road. Right, next question goes to Kirby.
I almost always lose, so there you go. We're even.
Kirby.
The next question goes to me.
Yeah, go on then. Why was Jo dolled up?
She was going to go out on a date with. Who was it she was going to...
That's the question I'm asking you, not you asking me.
What's his name?
That's what I'm asking you.
Come on, is there a timer on this?
There will be in a minute.
I don't remember the people.
Well then, Mary, who's she going out with?
Yates.
No.
No, yeah.
There we go. Right, Mary.
Yes.
What TARDIS instrument was faulty?
The interstitial beam synthesizer, or which wouldn't work the scanner. So whichever one you're
looking for. You got it right, word for word. Kirby?
Okay.
Master?
How did Alpha Centauri describe Earth?
Unattractive.
I might give you a point for that, actually, because one of the words was right, but I want a more accurate rendition of the line.
No, well, don't look to me.
Don't look to me.
Okay, you've got a point for that, Kirby. The answer was remote and unattractive at best. Okay, right. Mary's question.
So I should have gotten a point.
I gave you a point.
Oh, okay.
Mary, shut up. Mary, how did Arcturus demonstrate what would happen if provoked?
It took a good 5 minutes, but he did turn on his little weapon and he pulverized a vase.
Good enough for me. Kirby.
Master.
What did Hepesh tell Peladon? What did Hepesh teach Peladon? Sorry. According to the script. Dear.
I don't remember.
Mary?
Well, generally that he should follow the religious things and stick to the old ways and not follow,
It was fight, ride, and think is what happened.
Okay.
Right, so the next question goes to Mary.
Yes?
What did Joe say when the doctor moved a torch to open a door?
Oh, don't know.
Kirby?
I don't know.
Oh, you did a lot of doing it so well. I'll be in the lead by now if we were playing by the usual rules.
We would have both bet on you.
Yeah. The answer was right again, Doctor. Uh-huh. All right, so next question goes to Kirby. Awesome. What was the names of the Ice Warriors? 1 point for each.
Sorg. Was Sonny Calden as...
Yes, all right, never mind the actors. It was for Zorg.
And how did we say it? It was Islier?
Just to shut him up quickly before we went on about that. Right, Mary.
Alan Binion, who played Islier,
It
played him the last time.
That's my question.
Yes, he did, yes. Right, Mary.
I see his eyes.
Shut up!
Through his mat.
Mary. What was Joe's fake title? And this is the full fake title that she was given by the doctor.
I know.
I know she was Princess Josephine.
Well, that would have been a little bit too easy, but...
Princess Josephine.
Come on. Earth. No, that's not going to be enough for me. Go away.
Princess Josephine of TARDIS.
I'll give you a point for that. The full title.
I love that.
The full title was Her Royal Highness, Princess Josephine of TARDIS.
Okay.
Yeah, when Fred heard that, she just was laughing hysterically. The Princess Josephine of TARDIS.
Next question goes to Kirby. I can see Isabella loitering outside. Next question goes to Kirby. It was this one. Right. Which one, right? What was King Peladon bought up by? You won't get this one.
Oh, wise old men.
You will get that one. Right, we're going to have a score update. In second place, with 5 points, it's Mary. In first place, with 6 points, is Kirby. Next question goes to Mary.
Yes?
What was the name of the mute servant of Hepesh?
Gun.
Spell it.
G-U-N-N.
Sorry, Mary.
It's Grun.
Oh, Grun. That's because I wrote the R in there.
Why we were making the jokes earlier about grunt.
Okay.
Right, Kirby.
Master?
What mineral can only be found on Mars, apparently?
I don't remember. Sorry.
Mary, what mineral? What I just asked him.
Oh, trisilicate.
Woohoo! Right. Mary, your question. What did Joe find on the ledge where the statue had been?
Is that what, when she found the key, the electronic key?
Oh. Don't know how I managed to miss the top of the button there. That's right, because quite, never mind. Right, Kirby.
Faster.
Oh, God, you'll get this one. What sex is Alpha Centauri?
A hermaphroditic hexapod.
Near enough. The actual line was hermaphrodite hexapod, because I wrote it down after reading the
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Right. The next question goes to Mary. What color were Joe's shoes?
I know.
They were pink.
Yay. I just posted pictures.
You don't have to say I know, because you're the only other person in the quiz.
couldn't miss them poking out from under the curtain.
Mm, I know.
That's what she said. Kirby.
Master.
Was that your question, that last one, or was it Mary's?
It was Mary's.
Yeah, right. So Kirby's question is this one. What needs to be deactivated to kill Arcturus?
The helium regenerator.
Score update. You got that one. In second place with 10 points, it's Mary. In first place with 11 points, it's Kirby. This is Mary's question.
Neck and neck.
Mm.
Yeah, you better be nervous, Kirby.
Right, Kirby. Sorry, Mary, your question. Mm-hmm. When is violence acceptable to ice warriors in this story?
When is violence acceptable to ice warriors?
When is it? Because they've turned to peace now, and Izzy has said that. Violence is only acceptable under one circumstance. What is that circumstance?
Okay. I don't remember.
Kirby?
That's not exactly how he says it. He says they reject violence except in self-defense.
That's the line I was looking for. Kirby, your question.
Master?
What was the doctor charged with?
Blasphemy.
Mary, what was the doctor charged with?
Oh my gosh. Oh, I can see them talking to him.
I guess since he didn't say anything, it wasn't blasphemy.
Treason?
No.
No, it was extreme sacrilege.
Sacrilege, that was the word I was looking for.
Mary.
Just pretend I said sacrilege.
No, I won't pretend that. Right, Mary.
Just pretend the treason actually sounded like sacrilege.
Okay. No, I'm not going to do that. Mary, what rank did King Peladon give the doctor to save his life?
Ooh. I don't remember.
Ooh. Kirby, what rank did the king...
Did he give him a rank? I don't remember that at all.
Well, you should have been watching the story then, shouldn't you?
No.
The answer was...
I've seen it twice now.
I
remember that he could only punish aristocracy.
Honorary Nobleman of the Citadel. That was the title of your game. Right. So next question goes to Kirby.
Master?
What was Arcturus a coward by, according to Islia? You won't get this one.
Arcturus was a coward by logic.
Hate it when you get someone I said you won't.
And Centauri by instinct.
Yes, thank you for that, Kirby. Don't be a smart Alice. Smart. Smart Alice.
That's all he is.
Only when Debbie's not around.
He takes great pride in it.
when Debbie's not around. Right. Next question goes to Mary. Yes. What did the doctor sing to Agador?
I mean, you want the words?
No, what it was, the type of music that he was singing to Agador.
Type of music? Mm. I mean, I know it was based on God Rest You Merry Gentlemen, but is that what you're looking
for? No, I'm not. No.
What?
It was A something. The doctor sung Agador A.
And he mentioned it before. In fact, he'd said the first words before.
Okay, well, I don't remember.
Kirby?
Venusian lullaby, of course.
Venusian lullaby is the answer to that question. Right, Kirby.
Master.
How did the doctor salute King Peladon? So you have to describe the salute he gives King Peladon.
I haven't the foggiest.
You didn't watch the story then, did you? Mary.
I don't remember.
Oh my goodness, you lot of rubbish. He puts his arm across his chest. That's quite simple.
I remember
suit.
That. I've never
considered. I remember him doing that. I thought there was like a vocal thing that he said.
Yeah.
Right. Mary, yes. I think it's your question. While Joe was chairing the conference, what did the doctor say he was going to do?
Oh, I know what he went to do. I don't remember what he said, so I'll have to pass.
Okay. Kirby, what did he say?
He said he was going to go see a man about an open door.
Oh, yeah.
Is the correct answer. Kirby.
Master.
What was Joe's assessment of a relationship with King Peladon?
It wouldn't work out. I don't know.
You don't know. Mary, what did she say? Sorry.
That they were friends?
I'll give you that. It's just good friends, but yes.
Okay.
Yes. Mary.
Mm-hmm.
What word was used mostly in the doctor's lullaby? It's not a real word, obviously.
Well, something, it sounded like Haroon or
Hallelujah.
Haroon.
Yes, Hallelujah.
You get it. You got it.
Okay.
Kirby.
Pasta.
What were Hepesh's last words?
Ah!
Not quite, no.
I know.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, hang on.
It was my quote.
Hang on. Kirby's given up on that one. So, Mary?
Yes, I gave up.
The quote is, the future you set so much store by is yours now.
A bonus point, because that is word for word the correct answer.
That was her quote at the beginning.
Okay, right. We've only got four questions left, so score update is, in second place with 15 points, it's Mary. In first place with 16 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes to Mary.
He's answered so many more correct than me. How does he just have one more?
Well, you got a bonus point just then, but you deserve that bonus point. Right, Mary, what names did the doctor drop when he did his name dropping, as Joe called him?
Like Queen Elizabeth I and Queen Victoria?
Oh, don't know how I keep missing my bell. That's correct answer. Yeah. Kirby.
Master.
How fond of Peladon was Joe?
I don't know.
Go on then, Mary.
Does the word very mean anything?
Right. Next question goes to Mary, and it's a penultimate question of the quiz. And it's this. What did Peladon call Joe as he left her?
Friend?
What did he call her, Kirby?
Your Highness.
Yeah, I know, but what did he call her? All right, last question, and it all hangs on this one. This one goes to Kirby.
Master.
Where did Islia think the Doctor and Joe were?
In the delegates' conference room.
And that was enough. In second place with 18 points was Mary, and the winner this week with 19 points, it's Kirby.
Still neck and neck.
By 1 point.
Yeah.
What? How exciting. There you go. Right, so we look at Doctor Who News now, which is there's a thing on DoctorWhoNews.net. The Wartime Chronicles, starring John Levine and Michael Wisher. I think this was made a while back with John Levine playing Benton. It says Sergeant Benton because he wouldn't have been Sergeant at this point because he's a bit older in the story. So he probably would have been Brigadier Benton, maybe.
Brigadier, been, I was about to say.
That would have probably been a better thing. I think it's one of those productions that was made by fans of Doctor who made things with the actors from Doctor Who, but they, because they weren't allowed to make Doctor Who, so they bring all the actors in together to do various dramas. I had one at home on video. It was Colin Baker playing a weatherman, and it also featured Peter Davison, Sylvester McCoy and John Pertwee. It was really actually quite good. But I think there was also a series in which Colin Baker's character, the God, I think that's a strange character name, like the Searcher, or was it something like that? I can't remember. Or was it the something mysterious. I can't remember the character's name anyway. But this is these productions that were made by somebody. Was it called Bill Baggs? These names are coming back to me now. Is that a name ringing a bell?
Because I have no idea.
I'll read what the blurb says. It says, starring John Levine and Michael Wisher, written by Andy Lane and Helen Sterling, produced and directed by Keith Barnfather. During all his years working on the United Nations Heritage Task Force, Steadfast Benton failed in his duty only once. Long ago, when a seemingly routine delivery run for the Brigadier, he finds himself close to his childhood home, where ghosts from the past have never rested easily. Trapped in a nightmare world, where past and present seem as one. Will he be lost forever, or can he fight his way back to reality, a reality where he is desperately needed? Wartime is unique. Distinction of being the very first independent spin-off from Doctor Who, with John Levine reprising his role. Sounds like it was done quite recently.
Is this a video or
it's a video.
Audio.
It's a video. It says one from the world of BBC TV's Doctor Who, starring Sergeant Benton as John. Sergeant Benton, starring John Levine and Sergeant Benton. Wartime Chronicles includes Wartime Reunited and John Pertwee and you. Oh, it's a blocker. Bonus feature introduced by Katie Mallon. This is pretty quite intriguing.
It says it's a re-release. So
It says behind the scenes material, brand new introduction by Katie Mallon, reunited history of Unit and John Pertwee and Unit live on stage. It sounds good. I thought it was an older production. John Levine doesn't. There's a picture of him in the video. He looks older when I met him than he does in this film. But he did. He looks older in the film than he did when he was in Doctor Who. So, but yeah, I think that'd be worth watching if you're that way inclined. Class has had its final ratings released.
I met him just this last year at Chicago TARDIS, and he looked a lot older than that.
Did he do like a stand-up comic routine?
No.
He did at Newcastle. He basically stood up and told lots of very rude jokes for about an hour.
Yeah.
But he's a funny bloke.
I sat next to him for breakfast.
Did you?
That's right.
Well, I sat next to Matty Waterhouse for dinner.
Yes,
he wasn't that interested in me, to be fair, but he pretended he was, but he wasn't. But the person on our table.
Well, I'm hoping to be having dinner with Sophie and Fraser next month. So there.
Well, I did have coffee with Sylvester McCoy, and that particular meeting was broadcast on the podcast.
Are you coming to either Con GT or Con K?
Right now, it doesn't look good.
Okay,
that doesn't sound good. Thank you, Alan T. Butcher, for saying yes. It was Bill Baggs that did all those Doctor Who spin-off dramas, and then he said the Witherman thing was the Air Zone solution. That was a cracking story. Thank you, Alan, because obviously people that you can get these if you look in the right places. These videos might be able to get their hands on them. So I was just about to say about the what were we talking about? I was talking about Sylvester McCoy and the coffee meeting that he had at the convention. That all these things were recorded. So if you go back to the episode in which I did the Dimensions convention, those things are on there. I thought it was quite an interesting meeting. And in fact, I actually did quite a lot of input into that particular interview with Sylvester McCoy. Matthew Kressel,
Is that the one where there was a lot of chair creaking?
Yes, that's because, Sylvester's chair was right by my microphone, so as he fidgeted in his chair, it unfortunately, because he didn't know I was recording it. You have to do these sneaky things sometimes when being a podcaster, everybody. Matthew Kressel, do you remember him?
No.
Why are you yawning?
I've never heard of him.
He says, so if Curse of Peladon is about Britain entering the common market and Monster of Peladon is about the miners' strike, does that mean New Who should do a Peladon story about Brexit? It would be incredibly boring, Matthew.
Yes, it would.
Okay, well, I was going to talk about the Class final ratings. It's a bit awkward for me because I haven't seen Class yet, but I do intend fully to watch it. But
I
want to buy
an episode of it, and it didn't really encourage me to watch anymore.
I think the actors
I stopped about 2/3 of the way through.
I think the actors they're in are very enthusiastic about it, but I really do want to see it. But I think I'll wait until it's actually in a DVD package or Blu-ray package I can take home and watch it at my leisure. I don't really want to download that one because I never watch it if I download it. Other things I do download and watch. but I don't think I'd watch that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Maybe, because I hardly ever buy DVDs like that now. I did buy the Power of the Daleks set, simply for completionist reasons. But I think I did eventually get all the Sarah Jane Adventures on DVD, but don't tell Isabella, she'll nick them. But yes, it's saying about the ratings. They didn't reach yet. Yeah, but it wasn't broadcast at a time in which people are likely to be watching it, to be fair. It didn't make a million. I think the highest was 0.82 million when it was on BBC Two. But it doesn't matter. It wasn't put out to get a massive audience, was it?
I don't know.
Apparently not. Now, we still need to see what's going to happen when it's shown here. I have a feeling it's going to be shown here on Saturday nights right after Doctor Who, although I don't believe they've said that yet.
Would that be on BBC America?
Yes.
Mm. Yes.
Okay. Worth watching. I think you can't knock the British actors because they really do put their heart and soul into things. And
I like the show.
I think they were saying it's sort of, you don't know if it's aimed at children or adults because it's too much in the middle.
It's aimed at teenagers.
But I still want to watch it, and I did enjoy it. I did enjoy the first episode. But it just didn't hook me that I thought I must watch the next one. But I do want to watch it. I think Torchwood did quite well, obviously, in hooking me to want to watch. Simply because John Barrowman's portrayal of Captain Jack, it does make you want to watch it. He's a very watchable actor, performer, John Barrowman in general. So, yeah, that's enough of that. John Barrowman did rather detract.
Which episode is he in?
He's not. I'm talking about Torchwood as a spin-off of Doctor Who, which I was wanting to watch, and bearing in mind the Doctor was never in Torchwood, but he was in Sarah Jane Adventures, and both are really, really good. But I'm not sure whether this works as a spin-off of Doctor Who because of its setting.
I think they should not have had the Doctor in that first episode.
It
just brought the entire
story. I like seeing the Doctor. But Matthew Crafter said, good point, Alan T. Butcher, but I didn't see what Alan T. Butcher's point was as it scrolled up the screen too quick. Joshua Dybor said, watch more, it gets better. I'm sure it does. I think, I've heard that there are some really good stories there. So I'm not going to say...
I'm looking at the list of stories, and I stopped after the sixth episode couldn't push on.
Well, I stopped after episode one, but I think there's only eight episodes anyway, isn't there, Colonel?
Yes, there's only eight episodes.
So surely you could have just watched two more, for goodness sake. I've got a funny feeling they're going to make another series of it.
They better decide soon before the actors all get too old.
We have to watch it anyway, because I've got to do some sort of, I've got to make comment on this. This is a Doctor Who related program, so I must watch it at some point. But we've got a new series coming up soon. It certainly won't be when Doctor Who is on. And I really probably I will only watch it when I've got a DVD to watch. At the moment, there's nothing on TV. I should really put some effort into it. Right.
I thought the DVD had come out already in Britain.
I don't know.
Josh Dybal says, watch more. It gets better.
No, I just said that. I just said that, Mary.
You just said that.
I didn't.
Right. Anyway.
I was busy reading something.
Vorp Vorp Volume 3 has just been released and contains an exclusive.
We discussed that one last week.
Did we? Oh yeah, we did. Do you know we did? And that makes that in itself is quite interesting. That in that time there's been hardly any Doctor Who news. So that rather concludes Doctor Who news. I'm intrigued to see what's been happening at Who One. Aren't you?
Yes. Huh? Is that no. Who One.co.uk?
No, it isn't. Funny enough, it's a brand new Who One, completely not related to WhoOne.co.uk.
You mean WhoOne.co.uk?
Yeah, I completely. It's not related to WhoOne.co.uk at all.
That would be WhoOne.co.uk.
But however, we'll go and have a look at WhoOne.co.uk. Right, we have some new stuff coming out at WhoOne.co.uk. Single duvet set design. So if you've been sort of kicked out by your wife, husband, lover, whatever, you can now get a single duvet for your bed. £22.49. Cyberman jug, very cute. It looks a little bit like the same type of design as the teapot that Alicia bought me for Christmas, because they've got a teapot. It says TARDIS teapot. I've got the Dalek teapot. It's really, really quite cool. So all this
and there's little egg cups and espresso.
Oh,
sets.
They're cool. I have eggs. I might have to get them because I do have an egg during the week when I get up at 5 a.m. for work. I do think you can start the day off quite nicely with a nice soft boiled egg. So that's it. Yeah, you got four teacups, and I think you do. Yeah, four egg cups. Not teacups, for £9.99, and of course the Doctor Who magazine, 509. Go to whowon.co.uk anywhere in the world, and you can download. You can buy these items and have them shipped to your home.
Download.
I'm bearing in mind I'm giving both Avazi and Who Won a year off paying subscriptions because I've lost track of where we are with everything. So as of next January, I'll be asking for some money. But I thought they've been so good to us over the last few years that they deserve to still be our sponsors, even though they're not going to pay any money this year. Aren't I kind, everybody?
Yes.
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 And besides, Avazi is they're some of my favorite people.
Oh, I found the Dalek teapot that Alicia got me. Thanks, Alicia. It cost £14.99. That makes me think that maybe
it's,
she went...
It's coming soon, so you don't have it yet.
What?
It's on the coming soon.
No, page. Is it?
Yes, so I you do don't have it yet.
It means that Alicia must have got it from elsewhere, and that whowon.co.uk are just getting it started. I've got the box here somewhere. It's really quite good. I did have the box here somewhere. And I think it's worth buying that teapot just for the box. It's really got... Oh, never mind. Right, yes. So,
where did she get it? You mean there's more than one place to get Doctor Who stuff on the island?
Well, there's more than one place to get Doctor Who stuff in Britain, Kirby. But we don't talk about them. Right.
There's
so
not a whole lot of places in the United States to buy Doctor Who stuff.
Yes, there is. You go on a computer and you search Doctor Who, and you come up with all sorts of not necessarily legitimate. Places to buy Doctor Who stuff. I've got something that apparently...
Yeah, we get some stuff at places like Barnes & Noble and things like that.
I've got something that is not available in Britain, but appears to be official merchandise, which is my 10th Doctor onesie, which I'm very fond of. And that came from America. It's quite expensive, actually, to get it from America to me. But it's very exclusive. I don't think many people in Britain have the 10th Doctor onesie. That was interesting, wasn't it? Lavazi.co.uk are old friends. Most Doctor Who fans want to be the owners of the scarf that Kirby and myself have. Mine needs to go in the washing machine. It really is quite smelly after a winter of being worn, and it's been very cold here in Britain. It needs to get washed. But it's the fourth Doctor's recognisable, iconic scarf. The only place
I don't use mine every day. I only take mine to conventions.
I use it regularly. And it's because it works in very, very cold weather. You can wrap it around virtually your head.
It's going to get almost 80 degrees Fahrenheit here in Georgia next week.
Well, it's quite warm. 2 days ago, it's February, and we were thinking about. Oh, well, I was thinking about going to the back garden and setting the Barbie up. It was that warm. It was a shock to the system.
It's being very warm here too.
Yeah, it was lovely, but it's gone back to being a little bit cold. I will say, I'm sat here doing the podcast without the fire on for the first time since. Probably the end of October, so it proves that it's not particularly cold. I would say I'm tempted to turn it on, but more warm weather is what I hope for. But at least it saves the energy bills, if nothing else. Right. So
I just hope we don't have cold weather in time for Con GT, because
true.
It would make it difficult for me to get there.
True. Anyway.
Yeah, I would hate for March to suddenly get really cold.
Back to Lavazi. Yes, so the iconic Fourth Doctor scarves can be purchased at lavazi.co.uk along with a load of other marvellous Doctor Who merchandise, such as the Dalek scarf, which I bought for Debbie Melrose a couple of years ago, and found that Debbie Pearson was a little bit put out that I didn't get her one as well. And you can also get the Series 18 Tom Baker scarf, which is, again, I've got that scarf. It's a great scarf. Along with the Seventh Doctor hanky, the Paisley hanky, which is a nice hanky even if you don't connect it with the Seventh Doctor, and is also his sort of silk Paisley scarf. That's the Seventh Doctor Matthew Kressel, which he's probably got anyway. The TARDIS and Dalek's Christmas scarf is available again. Remember I said it had been taken off? It's back on there again, and they're very pretty. Buy them now, put them by for Christmas. Oh, of course, the Pandorica opens TARDIS exploding scarf is there as well. So go to lavazi.co.uk, and if you like Star Trek and stuff like that, there's also a few bits of merchandise you can buy in relation to that. And if you
forgot to play my Joker.
There wasn't a Joker.
Jokers.
And he knows it.
Anyway, so what's the difference?
Do you like Sherlock, Kirby?
Sherlock, of course.
Yeah. Well, you can buy Sherlock items. Oh, no, you can't. They're all sold out. Yeah, there's a Sherlock umbrella that's in the sale.
And you need to watch Sherlock.
Do I? There's a Sherlock umbrella that's in the sale, Lavazzi, and that is knocked down from $26.99 to $21.99. What else have they got? Just standard scarves that aren't related to Doctor Who. There's some really nice stuff here, Mary. You get a nice tartan scarf. They're all girly. There's some hippie scarves in there. Really cool. Let's have a look at the men's scarves. Oh, gloves. I need a pair of gloves. I might get some fingerless ones. Oh, they don't do them. Yes. But yeah, some loads of lovely knitted things from lavazi.co.uk. A great website and very good friends of ours. Right. In 2 weeks' time, I'll just make sure I'm available in 2 weeks' time. If my calculations are correct, I do believe it's the Sea Devils.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, the Sea Devils.
And which is one of the only
Six episodes.
That's why we have 2 weeks.
Which is one of the only times the Isle of Wight
we
was...
We also have 2 weeks.
Stop talking over my introduction. One of the only times that the Isle of Wight was used as a location on Doctor Who. Namely, Norris Castle. And yes, that will be the 5th of March. Now, on the 5th of March, I've got a bridal show, but I've got a half day, so I should be all right to do the podcast anyway. I would do it next week, even if though it's a six-part story, but I think I'm going to be rather grumpy because Southampton Football Club are playing in the League Cup final at Wembley Stadium against Manchester United, and we've got absolutely no chance whatsoever. But never mind, that's that. Yes. Yeah, so,
now,
what?
Are you going to go around the island and...
No.
Give some modern video of some of these places.
No.
Just from the outside.
Some of these places, it's only Norris Castle. What was the other location on the island they used?
I'd have to look up on Doctor Who locations, but there's like a part of a beach and stuff like that.
It was probably Osborne Beach or something. Look it up, but I'm not going to do that anyway, Kirby. Anyway, so until 2 weeks' time and the Sea Devils, thank you for listening to the show. Bye.
Goodbye, oh, fancy pants.
My Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.